Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It's the second half today on March 10th, 2024. I forgot to do the date last time. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cunliffe, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. You can get pretty much anything you want when it comes to John Deere up there at Pape Machinery. They've got tractors, mowers, implements, great parts and service. Go up and see them. They can get you fixed up. Spring's right around the corner. Once that sun comes out, that grass is going to grow about a foot a day. So be prepared and go up and talk to them. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Well, and now that we've done the time change, you'll get more grass.
Yes.
Does the grass grow faster when you change the time?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
An extra hour.
I'm really proud of all of us because we had, what, five people in here the first time? Now there are four of you and the two of us. So you add all those people up, we all got the time change correct. That's kind of impressive, actually. It's just impressive on the face of it.
Nice.
So this is like part two of the Addicted Offender program. So in part one, and you guys were listening, so you kind of know what they said about the program. So you're going to fill in the blanks of the things they didn't talk about because you were on the receiving end. And I cannot remember the specifics, but I know the one thing we didn't talk about the first hour that it always catches me in the graduations, that people say, yeah, the cop that arrested me, he was talking to me on my way to jail about the Addicted Offender Program. Did that happen to any of you?
No,
I've heard people say that, and I was like,
we do invite them to our graduation, typically, though, whoever was our arresting officer, to see the difference. But that wasn't the particular conversation that I had with the cop during
You were having
time.
A different conversation?
Yeah. It was a little different.
Kind of a less pleasant conversation?
Yeah. Less pleasant,
less supportive?
Sure. Yes.
It happened to me, for sure.
Did it?
Yeah. The officers that arrested me, and I had one in particular that, like, had a special interest with me. And so, like, he wasn't actually stalking me, but he was pursuing me avidly.
Oh.
And when
he thought you should go to jail?
He knew that I needed to go to jail.
Oh, okay.
And so whenever he would arrest me, he'd give me the lecture. And the lecture always included, like, you know, when are you going to be sick and tired of being sick and tired? You know, this will be your ninth prison term. Are you serious? You know, is this your route?
Is that for real?
That's for real.
Oh, that's bad.
It is. But unfortunately, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was curious. You can give as much or as little information as you want, but I'm kind of curious at what, I mean, obviously everybody hits a point in their life with a variety of things, but drugs is a biggie where you just can't do it anymore. Did you know you wanted to do this program? Did all of you know?
So for me, in 2018, I got stabbed.
Oh.
And it was a pretty traumatic incident. After I got out of the hospital, I had gone to jail for warrants, of course, and I requested the program, and at that point, there wasn't really much hope for me getting into the program, so I requested again, ended up getting an interview and getting on to AOP.
Why didn't you have much hope of getting in it?
Just the public defender that I had at that particular point in time didn't seem like he had hope in me, I guess you would say.
Oh, okay.
Is that a big part of the issue, is whether or not you get a recommendation?
I feel like with substance use and mental health in the community, there's a big stigma about it. So for people to say, hey, I need some help, it's really hard to get there.
Yeah, I wasn't somebody that wasn't even, wouldn't have normally been considered because it was my first charge and I wasn't really facing any prison time. But I had family that had recently been on the AOP program, and I saw the it was actually my best friend and my cousin, and she was on the program, and I going from where we were at in that drug scene to where she was now, I wanted to learn how to live a life that way. So I wrote a 5-page letter to the committee at the time, begging them to give me an opportunity to learn how to live a different life, because I hadn't had that. I grew up within the glory of the drug scene and the repeated prison terms and in and out of foster care and things. And so I really wanted to learn how to do something different, because it was a generational curse throughout my family for years. So,
wow. And I know for me, like, I didn't know about the AOP program. I was actually accepted twice. My first time, you know, being homeless for 4.5 years, not having my kids and looking at a prison term, jails was a revolving door for me. They came and saw me when I was in jail and offered me the AOP program. But when I got out, I had nowhere to go because I had been homeless. So I just took off and I ran for 2 more years, and then got arrested again. And they came and saw me and saw something in me still that I didn't see in myself, and accepted me on the program. And by that time, I was like, done. You know, I was like, I wanted something different for me and my kids. So
just out of curiosity, so we should do like some age. So how old were you when this all happened? Ballpark?
I was 27 when they first accepted me, and 31 when I got onto the program.
Okay. And then
I was 27 too.
Yeah, interesting.
I was 26 when I got on to AOP.
Interesting.
I was 54 when I entered into AOP.
Steve, you're just breaking the mold.
Yeah. Well, I come from a really, really long background of drug and narcotic abuse. And so, like, I got blessed by God, I feel, because the district attorney was highly against me receiving the AOP program, because I have 9 prior prison terms for narcotic offenses. And that's a habitual criminal status.
And you were like 50 at the time or something?
54.
You were 54
yeah,
at the time?
Yeah, I'm 57 now.
Wow.
I just graduated in January.
Right. No, I saw that. And I was really glad that you were one of the people who was going to come on. Because listening to – you guys always give like a little snippet of a story in the graduation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, listening to the different people in this group, there was such a range. You know, I know you had said that you were not a long-term criminal person and not been arrested before. And then when you came on and said, I didn't remember how long, I went home and I told Bill, I go, this is a story that has to get, you know, be told, because there is a range of people. Because I'll bet you the people in your family said, Steve, you're never making it.
Yeah, most of my family members had given up on me decades ago.
Did anybody want you to go through the program, or was everybody sort of...
Well, I'm at an age where I got to experience, like in the 90s, it was Proposition 36. In 2000...
What did that one do?
That was the get-out-of-jail-free card. If you were a narcotic offender, you were eligible either to go to prison or to go to a program. I don't know who's going to choose prison over a program, so I went to the program every time. And so,
But the program was just like, check the box, you're in the program, and now, oh, look at the time, program's
over.
It was
the get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Like, I had no intention of stopping my narcotic abuse. I just wanted to get out of prison. But in 2000, all the laws changed. What was it? AB 109 and Legislation 47 came out, and it was all about, you know, giving us programs, and if you're a narcotic offender, to push you into programs. You know, but then again, it's all about a level of willingness. If you're not willing to change is not going to happen.
Sure.
So what was the catalyst?
The catalyst for me was I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
You know,
finally just kind of...
Yeah.
Kind of overwhelming. And you had kids?
Yeah. So like I said, I was living on the streets for 4.5 years.
Oh, yeah, that's an incentive.
Yeah. And I had given my kids to their grandparents just because they got in the way of my addiction. And I was, like he said, sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was just spinning circles out there, you know, and I just wanted something different.
Yeah, no kidding.
You go ahead first.
You're
doing like a round robin here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was arrested more times than I could count in the 2.5 years that I was on the street in Reading. And I think one of the times that I really felt most at bottom was I had been released from jail, and it was winter time, and I had shorts and a tank top, and it was raining, and it was like 30-something degrees, and I couldn't find a blanket, so I ended up wrapping myself in plastic and cardboard and shivering myself to sleep. And that was the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's not the way that I want to live anymore. And it wasn't too long after that that I had the incident where I was hospitalized. And that's where everything changed. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people see folks in that circumstance, you know, just kitty corner from here, Crown Camera. I don't know if it's still Crown Camera, but anyway. They have a big kind of a porch, like a front porch there. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many Sundays we leave the studio and there's somebody kind of camped out there. And I'm thinking, it's cold and it's, you know, or raining or whatever. And I'm thinking, what's going on that seems like a better alternative than, I don't know, anything else?
Well, you kind of get stuck out there. I know for me, you know, I wanted to protect my family because they didn't like me being around because I was on drugs. So it was like I never went around, you know. I could probably go home, but the addiction was so strong that I would rather stay out on the street and be cold than go around my family and see them and have them see me like that. And I know for my grandma, she used to tell me, like, I pray for you every night that you don't wind up like your mom. You know, my mom died in this addiction, so I feel like her prayers were answered. That brought me into this program, truly.
So, when you were homeless and you decided enough's enough,
yeah,
you're on the street, you basically have nothing.
Right.
How do you claw your way out of that? I mean, you have to find a place to live. You have to find a means of support.
Right.
I mean, that's a tough road to climb onto and try to succeed. Where do you start with something like
well,
that?
Well, I know for me, it was getting arrested, right?
Right.
I got locked up. And then they came to me and accepted me on the program. Back, because I have almost 11 years clean now, so back 10 years ago, probation only paid for so long. In residential treatment. And so I only had 45 days in residential treatment before I had to move out or go into sober living. And probation didn't pay for sober living back then. You had to find a job and pay for it or move in with a family member. So staying those days in jail and then going into Visions of the Cross was kind of like my foundation of how I clawed myself out of that.
Right.
They gave me that opportunity to do that.
Yeah, because you're not going to do this on your own. You're
no.
Not, you can't.
No.
You definitely need outside help to get back on your feet and kind of start going in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was so desperate that, like, at one point in time, I would go and commit a crime and then stay where I committed the crime to intentionally get arrested.
Oh, boy.
Because I wanted that escape. I didn't want to be doing what I was doing, and so I'd stay in the area where I committed the crime at, just so I could get a break.
Mm-hmm.
So,
For me, it was my son. My oldest son at the time was just turned 5, and I, like I said, had been in and out of foster care my whole life. Lived with 20 different families, 3 group homes. My mom did 4 prison terms.
Oh, yeah.
So when my probation officer told me on the time at AOP I couldn't stop getting loaded, she said, either you're going into residential treatment with this ankle monitor on your ankle, or I'm going to put your son in CPS, and you're going to go to jail in a different county because our jail's full. And at his age, I had promised myself that my kids would never go through that.
He was going to do what you just
did. Cop car.
Did.
And so I made a decision to change my life then. And he's 15 now. He'll be 16 in May. So
that's pretty great.
Yeah. And my other two have never seen me in that life. So yeah.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you guys all have kids. Do you have kids?
I have 2 stepkids.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everybody's dealing with that whole range of family. Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, anybody in your family just not willing to kind of accept the new you, for lack of a better?
I'm still slowly kind of going through that. Like,
I wonder.
They're very cautious. Let's put it that way. They're very cautious because, and like for decades, I never realized this. I always thought that I was only hurting myself and not my loved ones. I thought I was doing them a service by staying away from them because I would get out of prison, go immediately to my connection, and then be off and running. I'd never make it home. And that was my choice, unfortunately. But after a while, your loved ones, you know, they have to put up those barriers to protect themselves.
Yeah.
Because you can only promise them so many things for so long and not come through with it before they have to protect themselves and put up that barrier.
And then they don't trust you anymore?
It's not a matter of trust. It's just a matter of not willing to be hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
They're waiting for you to, you know, do again what you've always done. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I know for me, like, the rest of my family were really excited to have me in recovery. You know, my brother was like, I have my sister back, you know. But my daughter was, she got the brunt end of my addiction, right? I gave her to her grandma at 6, and I didn't get her home till she was 14. And so she was mad and hurt, you know what I mean?
And so 14 is a bad age to have a mad girl.
Right. And so it took...
That's probably worse than recovery.
I want to say it took 7-8 years out of the almost 11 that I've been clean for us to rebuild that relationship and her to trust me. Yeah. And now it's like we're best friends. So
that's
it's
cool.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could see that. And so for the people who out there who maybe are thinking, well, they'll never figure it out, here you all are, right?
Yeah.
You're the poster children for that. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. We're discussing the Addicted Offender Program here in Shasta County, but I'm sure your county has something similar, and if it doesn't, you should have them contact the folks in Shasta County and figure out how you can get that put together, because it's making a really, really big difference. You can find the archive of this program, and I hope you share it. It's not copyright, protected or any of that. Do whatever you like with the archive, and you'll find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, so we've kind of gone around the horn a little bit. What do you guys think people need to hear? Because we can't ask you the right questions. We have not been where you have been. Fire away.
I would say the first most important thing that all of us were just talking about out here while we were waiting to come in is the people, places, and things. Mm-hmm. You have to change everything about your life before. You have to leave, you know, and I heard them talking about it when they were doing the
You can't have
first
just a little
of the
friends who do drugs
right.
hanging around.
Even family, right? Sometimes it's cutting off your own family. It's like they're still doing this and you have to do everything differently. Everything. You have to be willing to take suggestions and you have to be willing to change all aspects of your life, because if you go back to the old people, places, and things, more often than not, we see it every day, you go back to the way that it used to be. It's a new support system that you have to build for yourself. For myself, I couldn't have done it without God as well. But it's like without God and the people in my life that were going to push me in a different direction, I wouldn't be who I am today. And that's where I always am stressing that with anybody that I'm working with in my life today. It's like you have to be willing to change all of those things.
Yeah, the whole mindset of, oh, I'm a gangster, or I've done this, or I've done that, and the people that go along with that has to go away in order for you to be successful in recovery. And, like, for me, myself, analyzing my own perceptions of things, I looked into like the socioeconomic aspect of it. Like, who do I want to have in my circle?
Mm-hmm.
What do I
That's
want?
A good
my,
idea.
What do mm-hmm. I want my future to look like? Do I want my future to be in this circle, or do I want to be successful and make my kids comfortable? And so that's where I placed myself. I placed myself in that circle and stayed away from the revolving toxicity of the other friendships.
It's kind of interesting because I would think you would have to move to a different place. I would think you would have to leave, but you...
It's a common misconception, actually.
Yes.
It follows you wherever you go. I was going
to
say that.
But then you have no support system, so is it better to have none or just the people you have to stay away from?
It doesn't matter where you go. You're going to find... If you mm-hmm. want to get loaded, you're going to find somebody
Absolutely.
To be able
there
to get loaded.
There you go.
It doesn't matter where you go.
It's building a support system in people that are wanting the same things in your life.
And you
the
can actually do it in the same
we
place.
We surround ourselves want. With, all yeah. of us in this room in our lives today, are people who have what we want and who are striving to live the life that we're living. If you surround yourself with other than that, then you, no I, matter where you are.
Right, and I used to believe that. Like, I was born and raised here. Like, I've been here my whole life. I started my addiction here. I got clean here. But I used to think that I had to leave to, you know, mm-hmm. because I knew so many people. Mm-hmm. And I used to hate Reading. I'm like, oh, my God, it used to be an amazing place. And now, but it was the people, places, and things that I was hanging out with. You know what I mean? And so today, I mean, people, places, and things can get you loaded, but people, places, and things, if they're the right ones, can mm-hmm. keep you sober too. So it's just like she said, changing everything in your life and sticking to it, you know, taking the suggestions yes. like I do today that I did when I first got into recovery. Like, I go to meetings, I have a sponsor, I sponsor women, I now work for the county as a, you know, recovery coach, certified peer support, and I use my experience to help walk alongside people that are struggling to, you know, find their traction in recovery. And when you're new in recovery, doing those things are scary, whether it go to DMV, fill out, you know, GA paperwork, go to court. You know, that was one thing that almost got me my prison term was I just wouldn't go to court. You know, I had 27 failures to appear.
Oh.
You know what I mean? I was looking at a prison term. So just going, walking alongside somebody and being there to support them in their court case, it makes a world of difference.
And I'm a prime example that geographic change doesn't work, because I'm originally born and raised in Oregon. And I came down to Reading for a fresh start and ended up with 9 felonies and facing prison.
You weren't really good at the fresh start program?
No. I did not pass go, and I did not.
You had some fresh start challenges. That's a little too fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm another geographic. I was born and raised in Contra Costa County, and that's where I committed most of my whole life and most of my prison terms. And I came to Shasta County following my daughters and my grandkids. And unfortunately, within 3 months, I was looking at 14 years here. You know, so it doesn't really matter where you're at. It's mm-hmm. when you mm-hmm. make that decision.
How long did it take you to make the new friends here that got you into the old trouble from before?
Immediately.
Like 2 seconds?
Immediately. Mm. Unfortunately for me, like my first prison term, it didn't do, it strengthened my ties with the affiliation in trafficking narcotics.
Oh. And so, like, I learned to be a better criminal in prison.
Exactly.
Like we joke about.
I went into prison for the first time for dealing narcotics, and I came out trafficking narcotics. So, I mean, mm-hmm. it's pretty hard to become successful when, as soon as you get out of jail, someone's meeting you at the gate with a couple pounds of drugs, you know?
Yeah, so they're like, hey, Steve, we heard you're really good at this, and here's your new satchel.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like you're destined to fail. So yeah. When I got arrested this time around here in Shasta County, and I was granted this opportunity, like my peers have said, I made that commitment to change every aspect mm-hmm. of my life. Every aspect of my life.
Just out of curiosity, was there... I need to switch you so you're a little more straight in. I know it's hard. We're looking right at each other through like the wires and the thing.
I see green.
The tendency is to look around, but the problem is if we don't speak straight into the microphone, then people can't hear and the stories are good. I was curious, was there a person, who was the catalyst to your change, or just circumstance? or combination?
For me, it was a combination. It was my circumstance and that I missed my kids. I wanted my kids home.
Okay.
You know, but you can, I had to do this for myself because if I'm not healthy for myself, I'm not healthy for my kids.
Right.
So
I just wondered, is like, because as a person on the outside looking in, I bet there's somebody out there going, is there a code word I can use to flip the switch for them?
It's that desperation. It's that desperation that people need to hit their bottom and
timing.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely myself personally, timing. I could name drop, you know, my probation officer at the time. I could name drop, you know, my substance abuse counselor at the time that was in this room with
and
you
that helped.
Quickly go. And those people were the people that showed me that I was worth more than the life that I was living. And they believed in me when I could not believe in myself. And that's why this program is so key, because the people that were just in the room before us, they're meeting us where we're at, right? They're telling us that we're worth something more. They're walking alongside us in all of the crap that we're dealing with. And they're showing us how to process that and learn how to live a different way, and giving us the tools to use to have that as a toolbox rather than the drugs and alcohol.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And like mine, I had experienced so much abuse and trauma growing up that I didn't feel like I deserved to be successful or happy. Mm-hmm. And then there was a few people prior to AOP, one particular cop, that had made a comment. He's like, why are you out here? You're too smart for this. And there had been other people that had made the same comment. And then when I got on to AOP and the treatment team, the way that they treated me was like, I was respected for the first time in a long time. I didn't feel alone. Like, 'cause that whole time that I was on the street, I felt alone. Mm-hmm. Like, you think that those people are your friends and that they've got your back and stuff, but when you show up with no blankets after just getting released from jail, who's going to be the one left in the cold?
Poof.
You're gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so coming onto the program and really getting to feel the love and compassion that they had for us, it was truly amazing. And I feel like that was one of the biggest parts that motivated me into doing what I'm doing, which is facilitating outpatient treatment. For the county, and it's an amazing gift, and I see why they do it, because it's pretty cool to get to watch people go through the whole process.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, you know, we talk about different tools you have to stay sober. Do you look back, I mean, as a tool, do you look back and say, you know, I remember that life. I know what I was feeling. I know how hard it was. And now I look where I am now. Does that help, or do you try not to even think about that and just look forward?
Well, I know. Oh, sorry.
It's called like playing the tape all the way through.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like I've had enough sequences of recovery and relapse in constant prison terms back to back to know that
this
program works if you work it.
Right.
And it seriously doesn't if you don't. And so with that being said, like, I made a decision, like, what do I really want in life? And I want my family.
Right.
And so I made a decision that I'm going to do nothing except reunify with my family, be present, nurture that relationship, and gain an education. Mm-hmm. Because I want to make a difference.
You just finished school.
I'm in the process. I'll finish this semester.
Is that again?
Yeah. Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they elected me Student of the Year this year. But I work really hard at it. I spend every moment of my every day either with family or in the books. And it's starting to show.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And school, what are you working on,
well,
education-wise?
I want to be a social worker. And I started off just going for, like, the human services social work path.
So we're not talking GED. You're in college.
I'm in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I kind of overachieved a little bit. So I'll be graduating with a associate's degree in social science, behavioral science, human services, and a case management certificate.
Well, look at that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm an eighth grade dropout. Hold on, we need to have a moment. Because that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
That is a big deal. You guys are such interesting bookends for this. Someone who got in trouble once, never went to prison. Somebody who went to prison a lot and was really good at it, Going to prison, I mean. Right? You were really super good at it.
It's safe to say I'm institutionalized. Or was.
Was. Yes.
Yeah. Was.
Was.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm no longer.
No, but I mean, that can be something that can change.
It is.
And I think societally we don't, the mindset is, well, it's either get out of jail free card or go to prison forever. And there is this other space.
And unfortunately, it is that way a lot of the time, right? Mm-hmm. Because this program that we have is such a blessing in our area, and they don't have this everywhere. And there's not, you know, everybody can't. I mean, first of all, you have to be willing, right? That factor has to be there. But it's like, that's what happens. People, they go to prison and then they stay stuck in the prison mentality, like he said, institutionalized, right? And it's like, even for myself, not never having went to prison, but I was raised up in that life. We were just talking about that out there too. It's like straight out the trailer park, you know what I mean? And here I am now with a bachelor's degree and working in a job in the field and like all the things, right? And each one of our stories is different, but every single one of us, I think, going back to your question, it's like, how do I mean, I don't want to stay stuck in the past, mm-mm. but I work with addicts every day and I see where they're at. And I have to remember what that was like for me, one, to help them, but also to make sure that I don't ever go back.
Right. Well, it gives you something to relate to.
Right. Well, and it gives them something, right? There's hope when they see us in at school or in one of these positions that each of us work in the community, right? It's like, if they can do it, maybe I can do it too, right? And it was like, that's what those people that you just talked to that left this room a little bit ago were for me, right? Yep. If they can do it, maybe I can do it.
Yeah.
And so, and some of them never even had that in their life, right? But it was like still people that were regular, because that's what we're talking about, right? AOP is to help make us regular members of society. I want to be somebody that's not only like just here, but I'm contributing to our community in a positive way. How do we make that out of addiction? And it's this working alongside each other and saying, hey, I did this thing. You can do it too.
And I think that packs a lot of weight. I mean,
right.
When you're talking to somebody who's struggling and they know you've gone through it and come out the other side, I would think that they would listen and look at you like, hey, I can do it, like you said. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell when you talk to people who are fighting this and are where you were? Can you tell, oh, they're not ready?
Like, yeah.
These guys were talking.
We have a strong radar for that.
I bet.
Definitely.
I bet.
Yeah, for sure.
I work
definitely.
With teens, and I see that a lot. It's like
With teens?
Teens right now in this area. Right. I teach a substance abuse class for teens, and they will be like, they don't even want to hear it, right? I mean, I'm sure there are adults too, but I think that, and it's funny too, they'll be like, I didn't even, would never thought you would have ever did drugs before, because that's how different our lives are now, mm-hmm. right? Like, sure. Someone who never knew us
age.
Before. Yeah.
They're at that age.
Can't tell them nothing. I have one at home. Can't tell them nothing.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you can definitely see, I work with adults too in my main job, and you see it. You know if they want it or they don't.
Yeah. I would imagine you guys are a really, well, I mean, anybody who works in this industry, mm-hmm. I would imagine after a while you start seeing these telltale signs. But the hard part is to not kind of prejudge it, because you're like, oh, right. What if we miss over a gem? You know, what if we step over somebody who was just one click from being there and got booted like you did?
Yeah, and the thing too is like we can see somebody that seems like they're just using it as a get out of jail free card,
yeah.
But sometimes that get out of jail free card is all it takes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's like, that's tricky.
Because
nobody starts out. I mean, if they were already rehabbed, you wouldn't have to go through rehab. So you're going to start out before that.
And with AOP, I think for me, like. I had an agenda, right? So, like, I just didn't want to go to program. Yeah, I missed my kids, but that addiction was still kind of strong. I didn't want to, you know, I went to program. I was just going to get off probation, and I was just going to continue to do what I do, right? And I think that we see that a lot is people that are talking the talk, right? And, but it's that hope that changes, like Celie was saying, that gives people hope. that if we can do it, someone else can do it, right? And like as a recovery coach, like I'm out there, I'm helping in the community, I'm at the homeless camps, you know, and I've been at the homeless camps before, so it makes it easier for, and me and him both, like, went out there, and it makes it easier for them to come up and talk to us than anybody else that, you know what I mean?
I'm curious about
suits and ties that go out there, they're kind of standoffish. But if I walk in, out there and I tell a little bit of my story, those people open up. They take my card. They tell me a little bit about their story and see that hope in their eyes. And that's
kind of awesome. We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to pick up on that part because obviously homelessness is a huge issue and people are... you know, after a while, the compassion sort of goes away and everybody just gets mad about it.
Yeah.
And I think as a society, we're a little bit there. So maybe you can give us some insight there. That'd be helpful. We'll be right back. We're talking about the Addicted Offender Program here in Shasta County. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
But the good news is there's angels everywhere out on the street, holding out a hand to pull you back up on your feet. The ones that you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, or the devil even knows you're there.
Yeah, young guy, that was Bonnie Tyler. Come on. Who is that? Yes. What the hell? Steve, help us out.
I didn't know, honestly.
What?
Sorry, name that song.
I need to hear it. It's Bonnie Tyler, of course.
Funny.
So we were, we were talking about the homeless camps. I'm curious. When you go there and you talk to these folks, how often does somebody say, hey, how can I get help? How many can you actually pull out of that lifestyle?
I don't feel like that's something that you can actually put a number on because a lot of times it's more about planting the seed than it is getting results.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And so, like...
Playing the long game.
Yeah. And so I've had a couple people that I was on the street with and also... after getting this job, interacted with trying to get them connected to services that have actually come in and gone to treatment and continue to be inspired by how far I've come.
Sure.
And then there's other ones where they will utilize the services that are available and they're just not ready yet. But it's about planting the seed more than it is, I got to have the results.
Right.
If you're not going to go into treatment, I'm not going to help you. It's planting the seed and showing compassion and empathy and love for these people.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what we do.
It's just meeting them right where they're at. You know, right, like for me, when I'm out in that scene or over at the library or we've seen it, you know, I do harm reduction distribution as part of my job. So I'll
what
be out. So passing out Narcan or fentanyl and xylazine testing strips. And it's like, no, I'm not here to judge you. Here's something that could help save your life or check to see if whatever, you know, and it's like kind of like, there's going to be the people that right now they want to ask, how do I get help? And then there's just people that as you're passing out this bag, you're throwing in some like maybe meeting schedules or maybe some treatment facility like resources and you're just putting them in these baggies. And so then maybe they're out, you know, later that night or next week or next month or whatever. And they pull that out and maybe they have their aha moment then, you know. So it's like they said, there's not really like a number, and I don't always see them, you know, running to you to ask for help in that moment just because you're out there.
Yeah.
But it's just those dropping the seeds, planting the seeds, events that, you know, us three at least are participating in for like the Homeless Connect and things like that. It's just where it gives them an opportunity to.
I do a lot of sales, and one of the analogies we use
fits this perfectly is it's like a funnel. Mm-hmm. And you just keep dropping them in the top.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
You know, and pretty soon one falls out the bottom. And mm-hmm. that's what feels good. We go to trade shows. We talk to 1,000 people. And somebody will say, well, did you sell anything? No. But how many of those 1,000 people are going
to
come back
later? I've been
later?
To a trade show, and that's true.
And
that's,
all in the funnel.
And they're all in the funnel. I'm filling the funnel. That's how you got to look at it. You're filling the funnel.
And for me, like being as a recovery coach, the first contact out there in the field, meeting them where they're at, you know, it's a little taxing sometimes, you know what I mean, on myself. You know, a few weeks ago, I lost two peers in a matter of 2 weeks, you know, which is a really heartbreaking. But what keeps me coming back is, like, if I can help one out of 10 people, that makes my job worth it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that one person.
Yeah.
You know, watching the light come on and them actually take the step and having that desperation and moving forward with the recovery. That's what makes it worth it.
Absolutely.
And that's huge. Like, I was doing an internship with Hill Country, and we would go out to the homeless camps, and we would pass out the harms reduction, and we would pass out resource information. I think that when any type of population sees their peers and can understand that the resources are available if we need them and when we need them, and the locations of these resources, not only that, but be able to walk them through the experience.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's fear-based. Like, they don't...
That part.
You know, I know that I had a lot of fear. Like, I was afraid to ask for help because I just might get it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's huge. Because
what do you mean? Like, you would have to actually make a change? And
exactly.
You didn't really maybe want to do
it? Yeah, change is scary.
Well, every lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
Change is scary, but... To go out and talk to somebody and see that light come on has got to be super rewarding.
It is.
Yeah.
So how do you... Okay, so you guys have experience in the homeless zone. So how do we find your guys that are like the career in and out of prison guys?
In probation or parole office?
Right.
Yeah.
The courthouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is that a thing you do? Like, do you
not yet?
You go
that's
trolling for participants.
I'm getting an education for that, but for right now, I'm just the example. I live life on life's terms and show men and women with my background that it is possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that is really the biggest thing is just doing what you're doing, like living your life and being the fact that you guys are really open about this is really helpful. And I'm always surprised at how this program teaches people to be very transparent about where they've been, where they are, and where they want to go.
Right.
Exactly.
And we have a saying in recovery, we keep what we have by giving it away, right? Because it was so freely given to us, and it changed our life. So we continue to give back, like sponsor, be of service, take people to meetings, become social workers, productive members of the society is.
I feel like being transparent about where we came from can really help show the community that it doesn't matter what kind of background you came from, that you can be somebody in society that can be respected and successful and somebody that can be a role model for younger generations.
I think, too, something that is really important for, I think, anyone to hear that might be listening is not only that, but for me, it's huge to be able to, there are parts of my life where I don't have to share that. Like, I get to just be somebody that is, like, actually successful living my life today. I'm a very present mom. I have a very good job. And although I'm very open and transparent about my addiction in most cases of my life, there are places where I just get to be a functioning, productive member of society, and my past does not define me.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think, too, is so huge for someone to hear, that you don't always have to be... I mean, we're always going to be addicts, right? we're always going to be alcoholics, like, to the core as far as having that ism and not being able to pick up those things ever, right? Not even just one. But at the end of the day, too, there's this whole life for us now that we have made these choices to change our lives and the steps that each of us have taken, that we don't have to be defined.
You don't have to apologize your way through your future.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You don't have to wear, like, a badge of honor.
Yes. Right. Yes. And most of us do, but it's like at the same time.
Not in a weird way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Way. Yeah. Yes.
You know that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, you know, I was into drugs and alcohol, and therefore you owe me.
Yeah.
Or you should feel bad for me, or blah, blah, blah. It's that I think maybe they didn't pass.
That's stinking thinking, we call it.
Yeah, I think they didn't pass. I don't think you passed the program if you're still doing that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's like a mid-grade thing.
Right?
I don't care. Yeah.
That's
don't,
like a phase two, phase one.
Isn't it?
Thinking.
Yeah.
I don't think you get where we're at in our recovery by having a victim mindset either.
No.
You have to put the work in. That's the thing, is you're not going to get to where any
it's part of the process, but it's
sitting.
Not the destination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You have to put the work in.
I like the way you put that, because it's got to be so rewarding to be able to look at yourself and go, you know what, I don't have to put that out there so everybody knows where I came from. I'm a successful person.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of work. I've gotten to where I am, and that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people need to see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In our line of work, they need to have that relatability. Mm-hmm. But in our community, it gets to be nice sometimes to get to be that other piece too,
sure.
You know? And it's like... Yeah, and we're still light in the darkness, right? Regardless, but it doesn't have to always be that.
Mm-hmm. Did you, when you guys, and now I forgot to ask them, always the question that's always so curious to me, is how long were you in this program, and did you only do it one time?
I only did it once. It was 2 years.
Okay.
I did it once because, and it was longer because of COVID.
The COVID magic.
Yeah. I graduated actually with Sam. We were in the same graduating class in 2015, but I was on the program a little bit longer than her. So it kind of just depends. Like what? Now things are a little bit different too. There's different regulations, but realistically, like they were saying in your part one, it's like it's very individualized.
Yep. AMP.
It's like what person is ready for this? And if they don't feel like you're ready, like, there's no BS here. Like, they will hold you accountable.
Well, not if you're going to see them 3 and 4 times a week. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I tried. No. Trust me, I was like, no, Kim, I do not need residential treatment. I got this. I can do it on my own.
I totally see you doing that, too.
And she was like, you're going to visions. That is not an option for
you're going
you
to sleepover camp for...
Yeah.
Right.
As an addict, you try. Like, right? Manipulation is our number one learned thing, right? But...
skill set, I think, is what we call it.
Yeah.
The skill set to unlearn. Yeah. How long did it... were you in this program?
I was in this program 2 years, 8 months.
Okay.
But I've been through just about every program you can think of. My first program was Riot Roads back in the early 80s.
Oh, God.
And I've gone through every single Bay Area residential treatment. I mean,
you're like the Yelp of rehabilitation programs.
Yeah. You know, but through each decade of my recovery experiences, a serious seed has been planted and a layer of my onion has come out. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was able to look a little bit deeper. I can't say that I've ever gone through any type of rehabilitation setting and not gained something.
Yes.
You know,
whether we use it or not is the story.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, with the different amounts of time that you are in the program, what dictates that? Do you fall off the wagon, or what do you...
There's so many
factors.
Why
does it take longer or shorter for certain
people? You can miss a group. You can be late to a test line. You can, I mean, there's so many. There's
fake a meeting card.
Yeah, fake a meeting card. Oh, miss a meeting.
Caught.
There's different things that can get you in a little bit of trouble and have a little setback.
And it sets you back. And you kind of start.
Because that's that thinking. They're trying to change our thinking.
Okay.
And if we're, like, trying to, you know, fake a meeting and forge a signature, we're still not at that next level.
Right.
You got to move us back. So.
And sometimes, you know, relapse can be a part of that too. They don't always just send you right to prison if you've relapsed. I mean, that can be a consequence, but,
right. But
that there are always people what happens.
Who have, you know, relapsed and then had to like go back, you know, you go all the way back to phase two, or you go to phase one and you're in jail and you do that again. And then they are like, okay, we're not going to send you to prison. Let's try to
fix
get what
the
you
problem.
Didn't get.
Mm-hmm. I would think that, I mean, that's an important part of the deal. I mean, because nobody's.
And we're
perfect.
In the last 45 seconds, just FYI.
It is, but honesty has.
Talk really fast.
Honesty is number one. Like, if you're trying to hide it, obviously you've got some serious issues. But if you're honest and forthcoming, like, yeah, I made a mistake.
He is talking really fast.
You know, then everybody makes mistakes, right?
Sure, yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Honesty, willingness. What's the other one?
Open-mindedness.
Yep.
That's why it's a group activity.
Yeah.
Where's my break?
Quick break out
go blank.
I didn't have coffee before this.
Right. Well, yeah, coffee and energy drinks. Thank you all for coming on with us.
Absolutely.
And I think we'll do this some more because it's a process, right?
Yeah.
So we should include people in the process. I really appreciate
Absolutely.
You being here with us today.
Thank
and
you.
Yeah,
so
thank
you can find this show this afternoon. It's the 10th of March, 2024. And this afternoon we'll have the commercial-free archive up for you to share at We the People Radio.
U.S.
Oh, that was great, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Stop believing. Hold on to that feeling. Street life people. Don't stop believing.